Welcome to the Catholic Cafe, where Catholic truth is served fresh daily. We've made you a reservation in the luxurious corner booth, so come on in and see what's on the menu today. Now, here's your host, Deacon Jeff Drzemski.
Greetings and welcome to the Catholic Cafe. I'm Deacon Jeff, sitting in the luxurious corner booth of the Catholic Cafe, and I'm joined, as always, by Ziggy Rodriguez.
That's me.
Sam is here, and we are so excited because we have a great opportunity today. You know, the Catholic Cafe, we've never really done a show that's kind of, we'll just say, kind of political. I'm just using that word, and I know that scares a lot of people. So if you like to write letters into like EWTN or whatever and say these guys are doing politics, you know, go right ahead. But we're gonna do it in a great way. We have Peter Sonsky with us today. Peter, hello. How are you,
Deacon? I'm great.
I'm so glad you're here. You've agreed to come and join us here in the Catholic Cafe. If you don't know, Peter Sonsky is the American Solidarity Party candidate, presidential candidate. So this is a first for us. We've never had a presidential candidate on the air. Now, we'll say this. This is an open invitation to any other parties and any other presidential candidates that, whoever you are now invited to the Catholic Cafe. You're so far the first one we've gotten. Maybe we'll get some others. We would love to talk about, the Catholic Cafe. We focus on, obviously, Catholicism and our faith and how that's lived out in everyday life. And you happen to be a Catholic man. From what I understand, yes. And so it's a great opportunity to talk to you, because I don't know that a lot of people are familiar with the American Solidarity Party and what that is, when it was started, and what the purpose of it is. So let's give us an overview. What is the American Solidarity Party?
Deacon Jeff, the American Solidarity Party, let me start by when it was born. It was roughly in 2011.
Okay.
But there were a number of individuals here in the United States who felt as though the Democratic Party and the Republican Party were not doing it for them.
Sam, are we allowed to say Democrat and Republican on here? I'm not sure. I have to check. That may get beaked
the
out.
Two major
you say
parties.
Democrat and Republican.
Yes.
Republican.
Yes. Right. We can do it in pig Latin. Anyway, I'm so sorry.
The Red Party and the Blue Party.
Yes, yeah, there you go. That's fine.
We're not doing it for them.
Yeah.
They felt that the policies and positions that were on the right and those on the left were not holistic enough. They were not together enough, because there were values that they saw on both sides that they appreciated, but they couldn't have them together. They had
right.
to have them either or. There are other political movements in the world that have those values combined together. One of them is a movement called Christian Democracy. Christian Democracy was born in Europe, post-World War I era, and it really combines a lot of values that the Catholic Church holds in common as good for the common good, social
right.
good. We refer to it as Catholic social teaching, and they're all nicely together in the policies and the platform of the American Solidarity Party. So they wanted to introduce this. So the genesis of the American Solidarity Party, see, I got a Catholic word in there, Sam.
Yes,
that's right.
Yes.
Was bringing it here and making it manifest in America. So hence American Solidarity Party. We have now a Christian Democracy party that exists in the United States. It's very common, as I said, in Europe. It's also been very successful in Latin America. But this is the first manifestation here in the U.S.
And this, it's called the American Solidarity Party specifically because many of us in the from the 1980s might be familiar with the Polish Solidarity Party and the role that the Solidarity movement in Poland played in bringing down communism.
Exactly. John Paul II.
Yes.
Lech Walesa. That's precisely the genesis of the name.
Right. And by the way, one thing that I'd like to throw out there regarding the notion of Christian democracy, Because you have all this emphasis these days, people talk about separation of church and state, and it's got to be strict walls of separation, right, and stuff like that. But if you look at the founding fathers, a lot of the founding fathers, they took it as an assumption, even though some of them were, I mean, some of them were deists, some of them were, right, in that Masonic category and did not have like a traditional Christian view. But even those who did not have that traditional Christian view, they still generally believed that the government that they were creating still required a Christian people with basic Christian values,
right,
and that if that was taken away, that basically that was foundational to what would make the system work.
Well, and you know, there's been a lot of discussion, just especially of late, of just images of the Ten Commandments in schools or like in the Supreme Court chambers. Have a, you know, big image of the Ten Commandments there, and a lot of people don't recognize that it's really Judeo-Christian values that are essentially at the core of all of our laws in America, right? So it's not like this is a religious experience so much as one that is that benefits all people.
You're precisely right. You know, we have a, as you say, a Judeo-Christian foundation in the United States, but I think we've moved to a point in time where people now feel that religion is intrusive. Mm. They like to be able to make their own rules,
yeah,
and religion will impose rules. And if I've got to be classified as this Christian or that Christian or Jewish or whatever faith practice they follow, they've got to identify and hopefully observe those rules, and sometimes those are rules that are very uncomfortable and not preferred.
One thing that I think is important to highlight as well, because it's in the platform page and you've mentioned it in some other interviews that I've seen, is that the American Solidarity Party is very conscious of the fact that it is, the society itself is a pluralistic society, and that Christian principles are being introduced to the governance of that pluralistic society. Am I stating that correctly, or?
Well, precisely.
Yeah.
But it's important to point out that all of the values that we propose in our platform, the values that we hold, are all intended for the common good.
Right.
I used the term Catholic social teaching, mm-hmm, earlier. Catholic social teaching is a worldview through a Catholic lens. It's meant for everyone. It's
right.
Not
it benefits not just Catholics.
Bingo.
Right. Yeah.
Absolutely. See, I said another Catholic word. Bingo.
not in Tennessee, unfortunately. There's a law. So.
Well, speaking of the law, you know, with the natural law, that's something that is accessible without revelation. You know, like I'm going to go into the nerd category for a second with, you know, St. Thomas
Aquinas.
You never
got out of the nerd category, let's just be honest.
But his work, Summa Contra Gentilis, that is specifically written to kind of find the end of reason and where you need revelation and how far can you go with reason alone. And, I mean, along that journey, he shows that the Ten Commandments don't require revelation, that you can justify all the Ten Commandments from reason alone, you know, the existence of God and the basics of morality. Certain things like the Trinity require revelation, but not everything, you know. And at the end of the day, when you consider what St. Thomas Aquinas had laid out, you know, what that means is that when the Ten Commandments were presented to the people of Israel, God was really returning them to natural reason and natural law, that something that they could have potentially, reasoned on their own that this is how we should live our lives. But because they had gone astray in the way they did, they needed revelation. We, you know, grow from that revelation as well. But natural law doesn't require revelation. Natural law can be a dialogue with someone who's a non-believer, and you can still discuss what is right in a deep sense, as opposed to having to adopt this sort of attitude of relativism that has become so popular these days.
Precisely. You know, natural law is in all of us, right? It's innate.
Mm-hmm.
And we can experience it, we can reason it, we can witness it, there are so many ways in which we can identify natural law, and hopefully we can also accept that it is a part of creation.
Except now what we can also do is deny it, which is unfortunately what's happening. Right? I know, literally, yeah. It's happening. It was interesting you said earlier, you talked about, you know, religion or that religion becomes a bad word for some people, right? It's like we have to avoid anything that's religious in the public square. We can't talk about religion, and Sam talked about this idea of church and state, and it's always been a conundrum for some. But at the same time, you were talking about the fact that people find it hard to embrace all of their, we'll just say, their moral values, the core of who they are, the difference between right and wrong. They find it hard to find that in either of these two major parties that we've been presented. And even, let's be honest, especially of late, these major parties have gotten extremely divisive in terms of, like, it's my way or the highway. It's this or that, and this is good and that's evil, and there's no in between. And I think there's a lot of confusion. And so when people have this natural tendency to to avoid anything religious, right? Let's not pray in public. Let's not do these things in schools, et cetera. And let's not talk about our faith and keep our faith quiet. They don't want to do that, but at the same time, they don't know who to vote for because it doesn't align with what they're being told at church or what they're being told by their family and friends or what they've always known to be true. So we're in an upside-down world, don't you think?
We truly are. There's the divisiveness that you mentioned is not exclusively politics. There's a lot of
100%,
divisiveness
yes.
in our society. But politics is a huge contributor. And to your point, it used to be, Deacon Jeff, and I know we're from the same generation, that as you came to a general election, to a presidential election in particular, you know, the two sides kind of bent toward the middle.
Oh, yeah. They wanted to appeal to everybody.
Bingo. And so what happened, they would move that way and they would try to appeal to the centrists, to the people who were unaffiliated in the middle. But now they're happy to go to the polar extremes and just rip the whole country asunder. And let the chips fall where they may. To your point, it used to be that you could have some progressive views in the Republican Party and still be a welcome member because your views were valued as maybe challenging the thoughts and the understandings of some members, and vice versa. You could be a conservative Democrat. But no more. If you don't play by the rules, if you don't follow us to the letter, we don't want anything to do with you.
Yeah.
We'll primary you and we'll get you out of office. We want people to ascribe to our platform, our positions, 100%, no exceptions. And it's not making us better.
Right. No, absolutely. And you know, another thing that comes to mind here as I'm taking all of this in, and this notion of a Christian Democratic Party, a Christian democracy, right? You hear a lot of people argue about the foundations of our country and about the nature of our country. Some people say it's a Christian nation. Other people say it's a modernist liberal nation. Look at what the founding fathers wrote and what their, you know, some people like Jefferson and what their philosophical tendencies were, right? And I think that it's a better way to think of it is this, that back then, you know, just like we were talking about the founding fathers earlier, they were saying this has to be unleashed to a Christian nation, you know, this project of the new government that they were crafting, that it was a modernist project being unfurled to a Christian people. And I think now there's a turn where now it's more of a modernist, secularist people. And as a result, we've lost a lot of these things in our customs and our values that the founding fathers would have said were foundational to us. And so now it's a reverse, you know, it's an upside down. So where now this movement towards Christian democracy, there's a restorative element of that, of saying, well, now you have this modernist liberal people and the missing ingredient is sort of this Christian democratic influence that can be exerted through the movement of the American Solidarity Party. Is that fair to say? Or?
Well, I'm thinking restorative element. I've not used that before. I'm going to take a note on that and maybe use that. Sam, it's what we hope to introduce into American dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
As I said a moment ago, it seems that the two major parties are content to go in their individual directions.
Yeah.
And just say, you agree with us or you disagree with us, you're good or you're bad. Mm-hmm. We care, we don't care. What I'm saying is that we can't take an approach like that as a government. We can't take an approach like that as Christian people. Mm-hmm. We're all made in the image and likeness of God, and we all matter. We all have needs, and society has needs. So trying to introduce views, and not just views that are good for all of society, but also in an approach that embraces civility, in an approach that embraces the fact that we have differences, but we need to work through differences. We need to develop understandings, maybe not agreements, mm-hmm. but at least a willingness to hear and acknowledge a different experience, a different point of view, that we can find some common ground and move in that direction toward improvement, toward implementation of something positive in society. Mm.
So we're talking to Peter Sonsky, who is the presidential candidate for the American Solidarity Party. And Peter, we're so glad you're here with us. So we've been talking about a lot of stuff in the history of this and that and how the country was founded and maybe where we've kind of wandered all over the place in terms of our politics and what's been happening the last several years. Another thing that some of us have been, I guess, bred to believe, we've been taught to believe that we're supposed to keep our faith to ourselves, that we're just supposed to basically just, you know, worship where you want to worship. We have that freedom, and that's awesome. We love that freedom. Please don't tell me that where you worship and what you do. That's none of your business and my business. You keep it to yourself. And so I don't want to hear all of the tenets of your faith, and you cannot certainly put those on me. And we hear all these kind of discussions now. So you've said you're a Catholic man, and help me understand why are you violating that principle? why are you running your mouth
I'm
about all
go
these
to
Catholic
confession things? Right after this.
No, but you help people understand why we're not supposed to be silent and how our faith is supposed to inform what we do and who we are.
Well, of course. I mean, the Great Commission, right? We're all challenged to go out and evangelize, to spread the good news, to be able to share with the world what we have through our Catholic and Christian faith and extend it to others as well. But it's odd that we have this caution, this almost internal prohibition about talking about religion in that way. I mean, we're never embarrassed about talking about, you know, the fact that I went to such and such a school, and so I, you know, am a fan of that particular team, or, you know, I had a great opportunity to go to this restaurant, and so I love this type of food. Wherever there's distinctions, we don't normally draw a line in the sand and say, you know, this is something that I can't talk about with Sam. Mm. It just seems to be with religion, because we know that when we talk about religion, it's much more meaningful. It's much more important. It's much more foundational. And I wonder if that's what maybe causes some of those cautions, that tendency to put your hand up and say, whoa, wait a minute, I'm not sure that I want to be influenced quite this way.
Yeah. You know, it sounds to me like the dogma lives loudly in Peter Sonsky.
Yes.
I like to describe it that like Catholicism or whatever your faith is not like a suit of clothes. It's not something that you wear on the outside. It's more about what's on the inside and what you've been formed to become. It's who you are and the context within which you operate in your environment. And that's way different than like, well, I'm putting on this hat that says I like this team, or that I go shop at this tire store, right?
Sure.
That you're not an advertisement for religion.
Not at all. You know, Deacon Jeff, every politician has a set of values, a set of experiences, a set of views and visions that forms him or her. There's no denying that. It's true of everyone, not just politicians. We all have an agenda, if you will, because we have a particular sense of things. And we bring that to all that we do. And as a Catholic man, I like to use my faith as the lens that I look at all that I encounter, and that includes public policy.
Yeah, amen. No, that's good, and you've mentioned a couple times Catholic social teaching, and a lot of people, if you don't understand fully Catholic social teaching and what it means, but essentially enshrined in Catholic social teaching is not proselytism. It's not about, it is evangelization in the sense that you are taking Christ to others. But rarely in Catholic social teaching are you saying, let's help these prisoners in this experience, but make sure that they become Catholic at the end of it. Let's help these poor people in this neighborhood, but let's make sure that they understand that they need to be Catholic to fully appreciate or receive. It's not related in that way. It's Catholic social teaching is a teaching that's because we are Catholic. Right,
precisely.
Making people Catholic, and a lot of people they misunderstand that and think, if we elect a Catholic, you know, we're gonna have this. They thought that about John Kennedy, that he was gonna be taking orders from the Pope, you know, and there's this guy over in Rome gonna be telling America what to do. Now that was quickly, you know,
dismissed
because it wasn't true, and we have a Catholic president now, and so I don't think the Pope's really informing anything that he's. I shouldn't go there, but anyway, my whole point is, it's not something that we're putting on others. It's who we are encountering others.
You're absolutely right. It started in the late 19th century. Pope Leo XIII wrote an encyclical called Rerum Novarum. This is, for those that are familiar with Catholic social teaching, this is kind of the initial document that led to that term and what we now have in a collection of papal documents throughout 100 and, who knows, 30 years, I guess, since it was first introduced. But to your point, Deacon Jeff, the Pope was looking at tremendous changes that were happening in the world.
Yes.
We were in the Industrial Revolution in the United States. We were just post-Civil War. And there was a lot of upheaval. There was a lot of change. People were going from an existence of subsistence, you know, caring for themselves, and they were going into employment and labor and actually working for a wage and working in factories. And the Pope was looking at this, and he was seeing the potential for a disrespect of workers, of laborers, and an abuse in the sense of viewing them less than human.
Yeah.
And viewing their contributions as less than you know, a real expression of them as human beings, as
they were cogs in a machine.
That's
their
a good
value
way to describe
was
it.
Specifically what they could accomplish.
Right. I often consider it as just like another component of raw material. Okay.
Yeah.
You've got this material, that material, and labor is another component, a cog, to your point. And so he wrote this letter to the world. Obviously, it's addressed to the bishops. That's what popes do. But he's doing so to say, my brother bishops, I see this and it concerns me. And this is what the Catholic view of the situation warrants from us.
And just to clarify, yes, it's from the late 19th century, but it's not something that was new. I mean, he was talking about stuff that has been with the church from the beginning, and through St. Thomas Aquinas, and the teachings of the Rerum Novarum are really ancient. They're teachings, but they're made relevant to the situations of the day.
To the time.
So it includes a critique of capitalism, but it also includes a condemnation of communism as well, because that had also reared its ugly head within the political world. And so I just wanted to kind of clarify that as well.
No, the Pope saw these two competing economic political systems, and he saw pitfalls with both. And so in drafting this, he wanted to make clear that there are things that we need to avoid. And it's been developed over time, even up to the present Pope. Fratelli Tutti is a document that could be included as Catholic social teaching. Virtually all of the documents of popes in the modern era are directed to their understanding of the world.
Yeah, amen. So we only have like a little over, maybe not quite 2 minutes left. Help me understand why you're running. I mean, it's not typical that someone gets up in the morning and says, you know what, I think I'm going to run for president.
Well, Deacon Jeff, believe it or not, I have a loose wire. Which is partially true.
Yeah.
Yes, this is not something that a person just wakes up in the morning and says, I'm going to run for the president of the United States, the most revered, the most considerably
most powerful yeah.
position in the world. But it's something that I felt that it was a point in my life, and there was a need in myself and an encouragement from others to pursue this, somewhat to challenge the status quo, but more than anything to try to bring a new view to the present circumstances. It's not so much to say, you're wrong, it's to say, hey, what about this? I've got a different perspective than either of you have. It includes some of what you like and some of what you like, but when we put these together, they really kind of meld. They come together, they make a lot more sense. And there's so many people that believe today that it can't be so because it's not a part of my party's political platform. But that's not true. There are countless political systems in the world that have more than two parties that are very effective.
Yeah. And our two-party system has been very limiting as of late, right? Because it's gotten to what we described before. And there's a lot of confusion out there about what we should do and what we shouldn't do and what's right one. Are we going to vote for the lesser of evils and all these kind of things? We have a lot more to talk about. I don't want us to end with this particular one program. I want to invite you back and do another program because I want to talk about some of the American Solidarity Party's platform policies, the issues, what it is that you're that particular political party basically who you are. And I want to talk about that so that people can hear more of that. So Peter Sonsky, presidential candidate and Catholic man, thank you for being with us today. And let's ask the Blessed Virgin Mary, you know, the patroness of America, to watch over us. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus.
Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and in the hour of our death. Amen.
Thanks for listening to The Catholic Cafe. If you'd like to contact Deacon Jeff, send him an email at deaconjeff@thecatholiccafe.com. Visit us on the web at thecatholiccafe.com. You can also find us on iTunes or follow us on Facebook and Twitter. The Catholic Cafe is brought to you by the Order of Malta Federal Association. Join us again at The Catholic Cafe, serving up salvation one cup of coffee at a time.